And we're back. Another episode of the Durin Show. I don't remember what episode we're on right now, to be honest. But we're up there. I think we're close to 30.
Episode 410?
Yeah, we're so regular on pushing out content.
Yeah, the 100 episodes awesome. We did last year, it really really kicked the numbers up.
Yep, absolutely. But at least we're doing another one. Today, it's a small little show we've got going, but it's just me and Marcus today. Marcus, how you doing?
Fantastic.
Perfect. We're doing a small recap because Marcus traveled out to Philly and he did a 2-day five round tournament, or was it six rounds?
It was five rounds.
Five rounds. Perfect. So you did basically a little Adepticon prep tournament out in Philly, and we wanted to catch up with you and get your recap on that before it gets lost by the wayside, unlike some of our other episodes last year.
They are not lost. They are just waiting for their time. it was super fun. You said Adepticon prep. It was the exact same metrics as Adepticon: veto, scenario pools, 750 points, five rounds. So it was a perfect mirror match. And I was working on what a lot of people said was a very foolish idea, thought experiment. And so it gave me a chance to test the idea outside of Adepticon. And not to spoil the thunder, I'll just say I'm very glad I had the opportunity to test it before Adepticon.
Oh, well, a little preview there. That's awesome. So why don't we dive right into that? What was your list idea? What was your thought process? How did this come about in your brain of, I want to put this and this together?
Yeah, so the list was, it ended up being Alliance. I wanted to do pure Serpent Horde, but it ended up being Alliance of Serpent Horde and Mordor. And the idea came from the fact that I wanted to, in 2024, I wanted to build and paint and get a new army ready. And I've had Serpent Horde on the queue for forever. So I took the plunge. And then looking at the heroes for Serpent Horde, it's no shock. We're all kind of generally opposed to the super common vanilla ideas. And the one hero that was super intriguing to me is the Golden King, the hero that literally nobody takes. And so it was November, December, January. I was poking around and playing around, messing around with ideas based around the Golden King. I was going to take this idea to March on Music City, but there was a snafu with some models showing up in time. So I had to abandon the idea and take another army instead. But yeah, so the list was Golden King, three warbands. Golden King was first warband. Second warband was Suladin on horse. And the third warband was the Alliance. It was Mordor. I took Goroth, who is the really beefy fat captain, Morannon captain.
Right. One of the newer ones that was released to Gondor at War.
Yep. And I was playing just locally around with a ton of ideas. What I ended up taking to Philly was a really melee-based Serpent Horde list, not shooty at all, because I was taking versions where I had, 22, 23 bows, and I have an incredible amount of D4 and still pretty expensive heroes, so I'm not super hoarded out. I was at 47 models in my ultimate list, but I played a couple games against Rohan and Elves, and I just got shot to pieces. And at that point, I was like, okay, I gotta abandon trying to sit back and shoot with this composition of heroes. And I opted for a much more melee-based list. So it was a bunch of Abrakan guards, I think 10 to be specific. A lot of kitted out warriors who had, bows and spears. I think I still took 12 bows. I took a war horn because I was playing a lot of terror. I thought terror at 750. That was enough points where everybody's going to have enough to bring a big scary list or big scary hero. So I brought a war horn. And then the Mordor contingent, I had a ton of points left over. And so I ended up upgrading and bringing Black Guard of Barad-dûr. So I brought frontline Black Guard, backline Morannon spears with shields. So 47 models, three heroes. Yeah.
There's a lot to unpack there. So first off, you're not just bringing one thing that is not commonly taken with the Golden King, but you're also taking warriors, which are not commonly taken, in the Black Guard. And they get scolded quite a lot. Which is, yeah. So that's very interesting. I'm interested to dive into your breakdowns of what you think of these things. But before we do that, I want to clarify, the Golden King is only a hero of valor, correct? So oh, that correct. Makes Illidan your leader?
Yeah, I said he was my first warband. He was only warband one because I'm building around that idea. He's not
You're
my
building
leader.
Okay.
Yeah,
Suladin's but Suladan's there. Your leader. Okay, yep. Interesting. All right, sweet. So why don't we dive right into game one? Who'd you go up against? What did you face? And how did it go?
Yeah, so game one was against Azog's Legion, and it was a very interesting, unusual idea of just based on how many times you see it. It was Azog, Berserkers, and the Signal Tower.
Oh, that is probably a low model count army as well. Huh?
Very low model count. I can't remember the exact points of how much the Signal Tower is, but that's like 300 or 400 points, Azog and the Signal Tower, right?
I want to say it's like 400 or 450.
Okay. It's ridiculous.
It's quite a lot. Points. Yeah. I think it's more expensive than Sauron. I think it becomes the most expensive model in the game.
I'll pull up the rule book as we're looking. But it was, yeah, the list was. Oh, it was one hero. It was Azog with a warband of 18. And so
but the Signal Tower.
It comes with all the lieutenants. But
yeah, it comes with the lieutenants. Okay.
It was one warband drop because the tower is weird, which we can talk about. How stupid the rules are on the tower in a second. So he had all berserkers and one ogre. So 17 berserkers, one ogre, Azog on White Warg, and the Signal Tower was his 750.
Oh, wow.
And the scenario was... I'm blanking on it. I can't remember what the scenario was.
I think it was more of a killy one, if I remember right.
It was... I'm looking at my notes. It was to the death. Yeah. So it was ultra killy against just a death ball. Because, again, for those who haven't played the tower, it has four key special rules. One is a board wide banner. The second is Harbinger of Evil, -1 courage. Third is everybody gets to call March for free. And the fourth is the Berserker model. Instead of a 6-up fury, it goes down to a 5-up fury save for any wound dealt on the Berserker.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
So again, 12-inch deployment onto the death, and he was on me turn two.
Yeah, that's crazy. So he's basically doubling down on all the special rules, regardless of model count. Yep. And he's basically like, I got Azog and hopefully invulnerable berserkers that move really fast and get on you, decent might points, banners, see what happens. That's a very interesting list.
Yeah, and it was, I say it was, it's stupid from a rule perspective. And this didn't obviously come up into the death, but the mechanics of how the tower is played, and this is now the second time I've played against the tower, and it's been the same. So again, I don't know if this is codified in the rules or this is just very common practice with every single TO everywhere. The tower is placed before the game starts. Mm-hmm. And you can place the tower on the board on an objective. And if you do that, the TOs are ruling that the objective then zooms to the top of the tower. So instead of like just displacing the objective to the side of the tower, you're actually moving the objective to the top of the tower. And so on things like, go ahead.
Oh yeah, which is also, I'm just going to point out, there's no official size of the tower that's released by GW and no direction of the tower. So this tower in theory could be 2 feet tall. I doubt a TO would accept that. But in theory, like that's the other kind of ridiculous thing about this.
Yeah, there's no official model. I will say Alex Wright built this one. So it was just gorgeous. It was three levels. So it was pretty tall. It was three levels, but the tower was compartmentalized so you can take it apart and people could be fighting on the stairs inside. So you could disassemble, deconstruct the tower to play anywhere in the tower, but it was three levels. And so that takes, somewhere between 4 and 5 turns to scale to the top of the tower just of move phases.
That's pretty insane.
So on a veto pack, it becomes super interesting because all of the primary objectives like seize the prize.
Yeah. Yeah.
You start on it and like people are digging it up. Retrieval. You could just start on it. Your guys have it at the top of the tower. That'd be fun if you like get into a situation where you're jumping off the tower at the end of the game, try and like, free yourself.
Jeez.
I think every objective base, hold ground, the central point all of a sudden becomes up in the sky and nobody can get to it. So, very low model count. It was a clear advantage to me onto the death, but still formidable with how many rules it has.
Oh, that's crazy. All right, so you are looking at Azog, who's quite a beast in himself, but you have a Golden King, you have Suladan, and you have Goroth. What is your plan going into this battle?
I've played this before, and the reason it was so close the first time I played it is because the Berserkers are so good. So my focus was ignore Azog until he's the last model on the board. I have to kill the Berserkers. And then, again, I have a Warhorn. So I'm investing in courage that paid off because he had the signal tower. And so Azog is super powerful. If he gets into heroes or if he is utilizing Master of Battle. If I have insane numbers, 47 models versus, 18 plus 5 or however many lieutenants it comes with who are stuck in the tower, I outnumber him almost 3-1, right? So let's whittle the board down. One guy goes into Azog. Azog's might becomes obsolete. So that was my plan. And I have two striking heroes. So again, try and whittle it down in late game, start going in and enforcing the strike offs.
Very nice. All right. And how did it work out?
I said he was on me turn two. Technical difficulty there. Yeah, he was on me turn two because of the marches. I think I shot two guys with all my bows. So two guys died, failing their fury saves. And then he launched in, and I was able to build a pretty good horseshoe. So all my heroes were protected and safe, second rank. And then it was several turns in a row of, if he loses a fight, I'm going to put two or three wounds on him. My Abrakan Guard came to bear. I'm tying fight value, so we're forcing a lot of roll-offs. And every time he loses a fight, I'm usually dealing 2-3 wounds, 2-4 wounds, just based on the amount of dice with wounded bonuses coming back against him.
That's pretty good. And one thing I want to highlight about your list, sorry to interrupt, but he has a board-wide banner, but so do you, kind of, because you have a 6-inch banner plus a 3-inch banner coming off that Golden King.
And it's 3 inches on a very weird oblong model. So it's really like 4.5, a radius of 4.5-inch banner. Yep.
That's pretty good. Yeah. That's basically board-wide banners.
Yeah, so it was great. And for the first one or two turns, I shot two coming in, and I probably killed another 9 in the first two turns. So then the model count disparity was pretty significant. And then we get to late game, because Lords of Battle really prioritizes having a banner. It really prioritizes breaking, and it prioritizes killing the leader. And so it's 5 points for breaking without being broken, 3 for killing the leader, 2 for a banner without other than another banner, and then 2 for quartering. And so it looked very plausible that I was going to quarter him.
Lords of Battle is 3, 5, and 7 for kill count. How many?
Double, triple. It's to the death. Sorry. We're playing to the death.
Oh, to the death. Yeah. Sorry. To the death. Yes. You're absolutely
I said the wrong scenario. So yeah, we're playing to the death. And because of the model count, so let's think about this. We got to do the math. Because of how many lieutenants are in the tower, I have to kill Azog to quarter him.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yep. Yeah. So I think it's 6 or 7 lieutenants up in the tower, probably 7.
Whatever the count is, so that's how many people he left in the tower. So he left enough back to where I would have to wipe his army to quarter him.
Mm.
And so that was interesting. So again, just doing the math there, I'm fighting. I have to kill Azog, otherwise I'm fighting either against a loss or a minor victory, just based on the way the points feed out if I don't protect Suladan. So again, after 3 turns, it's looking promising. And then we were joking and laughing because, again, he's counting. He's taking all the stats on how much his fury saves are working, and his fury saves weren't really working that well. I would say that they weren't working very well because he was taking like 4 wounds at a time, and statistically that's not probable. He did fail a lot of single ones. So, again, he could have rolled the 1 dice to block 1 wound, but he didn't, for 3 or 4. And that hurt him. And then out of nowhere, we went into this mid-game where he was saving 4 for 4 or 5 for 5. So he had 2 instances where he rolled 4 dice and blocked 4 wounds. He had 1 instance where he rolled 5 dice and blocked 5 wounds. And he had multiple instances where he blocked 3 for 3. Wow. And this is, we were talking, I think our last episode is what mistakes do we make? This goes into the mistake. There were several instances where I just piled on because my thought process is I'm going to put so many guys on you that I will kill you because you're not going to roll enough dice. And over that mid game, two or three turns, he either won the 50-50 roll off on the duel or he had that ridiculous block four wounds. And while this is happening, the Ogre and Azog are killing four people a turn, three people a turn. And so all of a sudden, now I'm starting to get really dangerously close to breaking. And the amount of people I have to body block Azog and protect my heroes is now almost obsolete because I went for a strike combat play to kill the Ogre. And I failed a courage test with Goroth.
No.
And I wasn't able to execute it. And so now all of a sudden my heroes, Goroth and Suladin, are kind of exposed a little bit. Azog goes for him. And we get down to the last two turns where Azog is just blood-seeking hunting. And it's, I'm calling a heroic combat to send a guy to peel him off. I have priority. Like, these are like just neck and neck plays trying to keep Azog, you know, who's 0.1 inches away from Suladin, from getting into Suladin and killing my hero. But the magic happened, it ended up being the last turn. So the turn prior he was broken. So he takes his stand fast with the hero of legend, the automatic. The next one, he flubs his courage roll. He rolls, I think, a 2 or 3 on the dice. And the Golden King special rule is the rags to riches or riches beyond, whatever it's called, where I can modify your courage value. So I sank his courage to 1, and even spending his remaining might and will, he ended up failing his stand fast and Azog ran away. as he was sitting like 0.1 inches away from my leader. Like, again, if he hadn't have run away that turn, likely Goroth and Suladin would have died and Azog would have just kept munching.
Wow.
Yeah, it's Azog is a scary hero to place when you have to strike into him. He's striking for free and gets to save all that resource for winning the duel and actually dealing the killing blow. He's a very scary dude.
Yeah, very, very scary. I remember this going down. You would send the message right about, you know, Golden King, you know, courage test, fail, kill, 1. Like, yeah. Was, yeah. And we're like, who did you get? And we're like, Azog. And it was like,
whoa. Azog on board.
Yeah. Yeah, he just deleted a 240 point model or something like that.
Came out the gate strong with probably the best trophy you could possibly get in that situation.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
So the final score, again, I believe the final score was 11-2-2. Because he ended up putting a wound on Suladin, which I believe is 1 victory point, and he had a banner.
Because the banner on the signal tower.
Banner on the signal tower, yeah. And then I got everything else. So, good first game.
That,
again,
that would give him 3.
I think I had the significant just matchup.
Oh, no, 2, you're right. Yeah, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, yeah, 11-2.
Yep.
Significant advantage. He played lights out, and again, that list hits so hard and so fast. I tried to withstand it. I thought I knew it was coming. He still had me until the Golden King procced and made Azog run away. I was definitely on my back foot trying to salvage the game, for sure. Out of resources, like 1 might left, like that type of. I was depleted.
Wow. So very interesting, but you pulled out the win. Yep. Nice major win too. Nice job. So on to game 2.
Game 2 was against a guy who I actually played in Adepticon last year, Julian, who runs the Michigan group. Again, and I would say this is a theme for Philly. Philly was super fun in terms of I got to actually meet quite a few people, or at least if I had previously met them, I had the opportunity to actually talk and get to chat with them in more detail than just passing. And Julian definitely falls in that category, doing a great job building the Michigan group. And I'm going to bring this to you and Matt for next year's planning. There's a couple events that I'm interested in trying to make it out to next year there. But he was bringing a pretty trash, I'll say this out loud, a pretty trash list. It was AOL, Assault on Lothlorien. It was 11 Marauders and just a horde of Goblins and Orcs.
Holy moly.
It was Yeah, it was impressive in terms of the model count. I don't remember exactly what the model count is, but the model count doesn't matter when you have 11 marauders who can all dismount and turn into 44 models in the blink of an eye.
Yep.
So what was our scenario on this one? The scenario was objectives, and we ended up playing Breakthrough. And the board, and I didn't talk too much about the board in the last one because we were in combat so fast, but the board on this one does matter. It was a desert-style, desert-themed board, oasis. So the oasis was in the middle, although instead of an oasis like water, it was like a greenery that we ruled was difficult terrain, and a pretty wide footprint, so probably like 6 inches or so circular base of difficult terrain. And then it was flanked by houses, and the houses end up blocking both of the side objectives on Breakthrough. So on Breakthrough, you've got two on the side, right on the midpoint of the board, and then each deployment has one home objective. I won the roll-off, and so I picked a side where the buildings were blocking line of sight for anybody coming. So like the two objectives were on like the on the side of the buildings protected from view. And so I deployed generally close to the middle line and then instantly just ran to the two side objectives and the back objective, trying to stay out of shooting range, because 11 marauders, that's 22 bow shots, goblin bow shots, who are shooting with plus one to wound against a D4 army. Not exactly the most exciting matchup.
Yeah, no kidding.
Very, very stressful. Just, So, again, I was thankful that we spent some time talking in our last episode about, hey, let's sit there and think pregame. And if we were playing a casual game, I definitely would have done the Soledon march twice and try and get to combat as quickly as possible and see what happens. And if I had to play this 10 times, I think I probably would have done that 9 times out of 10. But my point for going, my reason for going to Philly was to test the list and try to be competitive. And so I wanted to see what would happen kiting. And so I did kite for a majority of the game, it felt like. You know, sit behind. I wasn't just going to rush forward in wide open and let his warg sit and dish out, you know, 44 shots hitting on five, wounding me on threes or fours, whatever it is, to thin the numbers and then dismount and completely encircle me and trap. I've done that before. And so I kited, sat behind the building, sat out of 18-inch range. You know, he would run up with the marauders, take a few pot shots. He killed a decent amount, but just never could bring his force to bear. And he slowly started crawling with his main horde, his main blob of orcs. And again, we probably did the moving shenanigans for 30 to 45 minutes. It was a really long time. It was a long time. I don't think I was slow playing. In retrospect, we talked about it. And like I said, it wasn't an enjoyable matchup. In retrospect, and I wish I would have just gone in and saw what happened from a combat perspective. But regardless, that's how it played out. Kited, and then again, I'm sitting on three objectives. He's sitting on one, so he charges forward, and our lines clash right on the midpoint. And because he had shot away probably 6 to 7, 6 to 8 guys, he is close to, if not already, 2 to 1 on a model count before he started dismounting his marauders. And so my thought process was, hey, I'm really high courage. I have a warhorn. I'm going to target the marauders, and I'm going to kill the marauders on top before I kill the warg and dismount them. Because what I don't want is to kill the warg and then dump, you know, three little goblins on each objective that they're fighting over. But that really backfired on me. He played well. He was boxed. He boxed himself out with his marauders. And so I was straight up fighting the marauders, but I either wasn't able to kill him, I wasn't able to win the fight. And then he kept getting charges against me. And I failed a ton of courage tests. I think an inordinate amount of courage tests I failed. And he abused it. So now it's me whittling down, trying not to break and have the game end too prematurely and die on the objectives, essentially. And that's what ended up happening. He made this game was definitely his for the win. Again, we play it 9 times out of 10. He wins this probably 9 times. He made a pretty bad blunder, though, early on. I forgot the rule that makes the orc shaman have to be the leader. What's his name? Oh,
yeah. Muzgur.
Muzgur. He did like a heroic combat play with a captain and Muzgur and went into my backline going for... He enraged a bat. And so it was a captain, Muzgur, and a bat swarm jump on the Golden King. But they all can't jump on the Golden King. But they all run into the back line. And so Muzgur goes for a Serpent Rider who hasn't charged. And then the bat swarm and a captain go for the Golden King. They don't kill him. And then the next turn, Soladin and the other knights who are in my back rank delete Muzgur and the captain and the bat swarm. And the Golden King helps. And so I didn't think much of it. He was annoyed and he made some comments. And in retrospect, I realized it because he let his leader die, giving me 2 victory points. And that ended up, being the difference in the game because, let's see. So I ended up protecting my back race. So he outnumbers me. He outplays me in the middle. His models absolutely kill my models. The left objective I secure. Because the Golden King helps lock that down. So I have more models on the left, which is 1 victory point. Soladin runs back to protect my objective in the back line. So that's 1 victory point. And I killed his leader because he fed him to me. As a misplay blunder. That gets me to 4. And I have a really clutch courage test plus charge on the right objective, and he has like 40 goblins who are all like half inch away from the right objective to take that one from me. So I think the final score ended up being 4-3. I'm trying to do the math on how he got. So he broke me without being broken, and he had the right, and he had his back objective, and we tied on the right objective.
Mm.
And this is with me running towards quarter. If not, I think that game ends on quarter. So I was either at quarter or just about to be. And again, one or two more turns, he probably would have tabled me with the amount of models he had.
And you killed his leader and yep. secured your back objective?
And the left objective, yeah.
And the left objective. So that's, I'm trying to realize how that is 4-3.
So the side objectives are 1 and 2 points. It's 1 point if you right. have more models. It's 2 points if they don't have any. He had right. models left on the left, so that gave me 1.
Okay.
I killed Muzgur to give me 2. And then I protected my back objective for 1.
That's 4. Okay, and then he had 1, 1, and breaking without being broken, so that's 2?
He had 1 for protecting his back objective. We tied okay. on the right objective, so no points awarded.
Oh, and got it. And then he broke you.
Broke me. Yeah. Okay. I think that's what it was, because he definitely had 3, so maybe we're messing up the score in there. I can pull up the rule book.
Yeah, no big deal. But I believe you that the end score is 4-3.
It was it was one of those things where we chatted. It was right around lunch break, so we chatted quite a ways. We chatted a lot about it. He had a lot of thoughts about how he should have encircled me earlier on to prevent me from doing as much kiting. That would have been really helpful for him, and it would have forced my hand probably a little bit more aggressively. He clearly called out like it was just a major faux pas blunder to put Muzgur in my back line. He didn't have to. He could have still gone for the Golden King without sacrificing his hero or his leader. And again, there was a couple courage tests. Again, I failed most of them, but the 2 or 3 that I needed were the exact 2 or 3 that I got to keep people on the right objective, you know, all safe and sound. So it was one of those where you play a game and it feels like a major victory, and somehow it ends up being a loss for you, and you scratch your head. You're like, how does that work?
Yeah,
that's definitely what happened in that game.
Oh yeah, we've all been there.
Yep.
So before we move on to the next round, there is one thing that I have learned, and I believe you have learned now, that I think we can pass on as knowledge and information. If you see a Warg Marauder, always, always, always go for the Warg, no matter what. Even if like you're fighting over an objective, because unless the game's like guaranteed to end that turn and you want to keep it as one model or whatever, like some weird circumstance. But yep. The problem is they have the terror while the warg is still there. They still have the charging bonus. Yep. It causes all kinds of problems.
And so, they can shoot. Yeah, I mean, if you don't still dismount shoot. Them, they're still shooting in the each turn if they want to.
Exactly. So if you kill the warg, it's just three little linky goblins that are on the ground. But if you leave him on the warg, it still has the terror, it still has the shooting bonuses, and it still has the charging bonuses. It's just all kinds of problems.
And it's strength four. It's strength four on the charge.
Yeah, it's way, way, way better on the warg. Yep.
So, yep, I definitely agree with that. It was a misplay. I wanted to try it. I've never been that dedicated and focused on trying to kill the shield. Total misplay.
Yep. All right, so, moving on.
Other thing I want to do really quickly, we can do these for all of them, but my thoughts of the army. So in round one, it's hard to say anything except the Golden King was awesome because he netted me 200 points and a big win because he made Azog run away. In game two, it was a little bit weird. And I'm trying to think of the grade I would give the Golden King. I think Saladin gets the MVP on the game because he killed Muzgur and he, with his 10-inch horse charge, he went back to my back objective and cleared up the goblins who were there. So I think he gets the MVP. The Golden King played a really good role as tank, and he helped because of the banner, but I wouldn't say he was super effective. And I think it makes sense because I wasn't even close to breaking AOL. Like, I think I killed maybe 10 or 12 guys total. But he was not in danger of breaking. Therefore, the Golden King's rule is not proccing. So game one, I'd give him an A+. Game two, maybe like a B-. And the value in that B- is really because of his role of being a banner on the left side of my army and just not dying.
Well, and obviously being the bait for the stupid move of Muzgur blitzing through the line trying to get him.
Well, but again, we play that 10 times and Julian's not being silly and making a brain fart. That doesn't happen 9 times
makes
out of 10.
Sense.
So definitely should have lost that game. Golden King gets a B- C+ at best.
Very cool.
And this game, I definitely felt, you'll see the theme. I definitely felt the weight of having two very expensive support based heroes.
Yeah. No, like a Lendels or Azog's charging forward.
Yeah. Yeah. It was heavy. Okay. So we are on to game three. Game three is Hold Ground against Depths of Moria, the Belrog Legendary Legion. The army, I hope I don't butcher this, the army was comprised of three warbands, I believe. He had drums,
mm-hmm.
and he had captains. Maybe there was four warbands with the Belrog. You play this army more than I. I can't remember how many warbands you have on this with the Belrog.
So Belrog's 350. To get to 750, and he just had captains, no black shield shamans, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah, no shamans,
and
just captains.
And he had drum, I would say probably max three captains if he's trying to max out his numbers with the drums.
Yeah, he definitely did. And he played this a lot. So it was very optimized, well-tuned. So it was just captains. Let's say it was three captains with max gabos
mm-hmm.
on Hold Ground. The big thing, and I wanted to play a Maelstrom scenario really badly to see how, again, the army played, if it couldn't play by itself or if it had to play by itself. And won the roll off by losing priority turn one. So Moria had to come on first and he rolled decently. I think he spent 1 point of might and then one warband just didn't come on at all. So he comes on the very, very corner together and has a pretty good trek to get to the center objective just by dodging a few pieces of terrain. I roll pretty decently, not horrible. Again, I spend maybe 1 or 2 points of might to bring my army on the other side of the board to race towards Hold Ground, the middle. And then turn two, he rolls really badly with his last warband, and I put it on behind me. So I'm basically blocking it from getting to the central objective. So this one was a really interesting game. Again, a common theme, I got outshot in every single game, except the one game where there were no bows shooting back at me. He had six or seven goblin archers, they nuked two horses, two of my serpent guard, within the ways. They killed two African guard. They killed like three archers. And this is when I have six or seven archers shooting back at them. And I was in cover. He was in the wide open. And it blew my mind. Like, what the heck is happening? But my mounted force. So I have six serpent guard and Soladin. So I lost two to shooting, which is really funny shooting. Everybody else ran way past the whole ground because I wanted to hit him from both sides. I knew the Belrogs
were right.
There's no stopping the Belrog to get to the middle. So I ran Soladin and four serpent guard way past him to allow him to run past me. And I was going to pick on the back line. And the Golden King in the force was sitting in the middle waiting for the force to show up. And I marched once, so that's why I was so far past it.
Yeah.
So the Belrog, the game is essentially summarized this. The Belrog gets to the middle, and I'm trying to whittle him down. And I'm staging, I played the Belrog a lot. I'm using the strategy of I'm going to kite you and block you until I'm ready to throw everything, and we're just going to start doing the strike. Can I strike to 10? Can I win a roll off? Or am I going to force you to roll that 6? And the whole game comes down to the fact that every time I made the play to go in and have that gangbusters play, he rolled the 6. And so I wasn't able to win the duel and actually bring my force to bear.
Which is surprising how often that's been happening lately. Like, I would say, like, obviously it can happen with Belrog, we know that, but we also know the statistics. It's like a 51% chance with 4 dice, no rerolls, no might, to get the 6. And lately, I played the Belrog in January, and it never failed to roll the 6, I would say, except for one time. Like, it, and I'm like, man, it's just a 50-50.
So, I agree. It definitely goes through hot and cold phases. We've both had the games where the Belrog doesn't roll the 6 on the first duel and then take 7 wounds. And then you're kind of done with it for the rest of the game.
Right.
Because it can break and everything. So, like, it definitely goes the other way. The funny thing is he didn't roll a 6 every duel, but he rolled high enough every duel. The most crushing one was I went in. Again, the interesting thing, we talked about this one. He's a great guy. He ended up winning the tournament with his list. And he'd played that army exclusively for over 2 years, he said. So he played it really well, played it really precise, was very good with the Belrog. But he was really nervous about the Golden King because Golden King trapped is throwing 8 dice at you with the +1 to wound. So I'm wounding you on, 5x3s with 8 dice. So that's a pretty decent chunk to get, that's a pretty decent likelihood of getting some wounds. And with as many Abrican Guard as I had in there, it's the same thing. They're rolling double dice. You're trapped every single time sitting on the middle of the objective. So he was definitely happy every time he won. And again, I think I went in a total of 4 times to try and get him. I missed all 4 times. One of the times he rolled a 4 high and won the duel with a 4 high. That was the soul crushing one. Cause I saw him roll. I always made him roll first to add to the suspense of the game. And he rolled the 4 high. I was like, yep, this is it. This is a big one. Like, he's actually in danger of just straight dying in one turn at this point. And then I rolled a 4 high and clearly not a 4 with any of the models that had might, Goroth and the Golden King sitting in there trying to fend off the Belrog. But no, overall it was a good game. There's always some tactical things, like little nitty picky things you could do, a slight change on your move here and there. But generally, I was very happy with how I played it. I was camping with, almost my entire army in the middle. I got there first. The Belrog came in. I limited his impact, although not by much, because he was dealing out the pain with the Belrog. And the scoring ended up being, I think it was 8 to 9 models in the middle is how the scoring ended up being at the end of the game.
Ooh, super close.
And he broke me like the last turn or two. So he ended up taking a 6-0 major win. But again, he was one turn away from taking enough wounds that he would have, because the Balrog breaks right after he's below five wounds.
They break as normal. Yeah, they break as normal.
Yeah, so he would have broke. He would have broken if I would have gotten one duel off against him, and I almost survived in terms of having enough models left in the middle to just take the middle from him. So again, it was a really close game. It was a really enjoyable game. He ended up blowing me out of the water score wise, but I'm not unhappy with how I played it. And in that game, I would absolutely give the Golden King the MVP in terms of he took the and flame special rule from the Balrog, and it was fine. Provided incredible banner support in the middle, because Soladin, as the leader, I wanted to keep him out of lash range. So he was he was poking the back line, poking the captains, really being kind of a nuisance, I thought, outside of the range of the Balrog. And then came in only at the last minute to try and help add numbers to the central force. And so being able to fight on two fronts with the banner was very nice. So I'll definitely give the Golden King the victory, although there's no point in it because all the goblins were fearless and the Balrog has 10 will, so he's never failing courage tests.
Yeah, and the Balrog's fearless as well. So
yeah, so it like
literally is never.
There's no situation with the Golden King giving me value on that matchup.
So how do you feel about the army so far after day one?
So yeah, so that's a good point. That was the last game of the day. I was feeling really good. So again, the first game, I should have won. I did win big. Cool. Second game, I should have lost. I won just because of craziness. You chalk that up as a loss. And there really was nothing I could have done differently there that would have drastically changed the outcome. So I felt like, ooh, I'm clearly outmatched here. But game three against a guy who ended the day 3-0, I played very competitively against a very tough matchup. In each of these scenario pools, I was intentionally vetoing the good matchups because I wanted to really stress the army. Like, I didn't have to play hold ground against the Balrog. I wanted to. That was one I actually picked. And so I felt like, okay, there's real potential here. I felt good ending day one, even though the scores weren't super great.
Right. And 2-1's not bad. And you could say, yeah, round two, you could have lost that, but round three, you could have won. So it's kind of a trade-off. I think either way you end up 2-1. Yep.
Yeah. I think either way, there's a very good odds of me finishing 2-1 regardless. So yeah. 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 Agree with that.
Awesome. So going day two.
Day two. Yep. We start the day. I actually play, again, another cool opportunity to meet people. It was a guy named Eric from the Bay Area. So I got plugged in with the Bay Area group. So looking forward to making my way down there. And I have a couple events to pitch you and Matt to go down to the Bay Area for. But he was running a very well-tuned Halls of Thranduil alliance with Erebor Reclaimed. So it was Thranduil, Thoron Goat, and his last hero was a Lake Town captain to bring numbers. And he had his army really kitted out in an optimized way. So Thranduil was on foot. He was not on elk or horse. So Thranduil was on foot. Thoron was on goat. Thoron brought Iron Hill, a block of Iron Hills. Thranduil brought a block of palace guards with some bows. But the captain brought a max warband of Lake Town guys with axes for piercing strike. So it was just a YOLO warband to beef his numbers and give some punching power. So they all had axes and spears to be either the support or to be a piercing strike option, which ended up being really brutal against my D4 army. Again, I'm wounding them on low dice with all of my wounding bonuses, but he's wounding me on low dice because all of his guys are strength 4 or plus 1 to wound with his elves. So the scenario we draw the unique scenario, which is class by moonlight, storm the camp. And what's the other one? Fog of War, maybe? What's the last one in that scenario pool?
Say that again. Sorry.
I'm looking at the pools. It was scenario. Okay. What, so it was. What's... I got it wrong. So this tournament, it wasn't a pool-based three that you veto from. It was a mix.
Oh, okay.
So the two of the options, for whatever reason, I don't remember. Two of the options were Clash by Moonlight and Storm the Camp. Those are in
Yes. Yeah.
different
Clash by
pools.
Moonlight is pool. Yeah. Clash by Moonlight is pool 6, and Storm the Camp's pool 5.
So whatever the first one was, he vetoed that because it wasn't a good matchup. So I was left with, do we pick Storm the Camp or do we pick Clash by Moonlight? For Storm the Camp, it seemed pretty cut and dry
Yeah.
because he had very little mobility. He had a couple horses, but he wants to fight in a bubble because of Thranduil. So I thought it was pretty likely that he would just turtle in his camp and break me and go for the leader kill. And so I opted to play for Clash because it would be more likely that we would get into some interesting combat and actually have to think. So we played Clash by Moonlight. Again, we were on that same desert map again. So a couple buildings, the oasis, difficult terrain piece in the middle. And he
Yep,
sets up,
same home field advantage.
yep, same home field advantage. Yeah, I didn't think about that. Serpent Horde on desert. And he had his archer count wasn't crazy. I think he had like six elves archers, maybe five, and then a handful of like town. But again, when elves are shooting into Serpent Horde, who are D4, it's a lot better than 12 elf serpent 12 Serpent Horde archers shooting back into D6 or D8. And so he had a clear shooting advantage, not even considering the Clash by Moonlight rule. And so my strategy was I'm going to have to just engage quickly and see what happens. And I think this was one of my best deployment and maneuvering scenarios that I've played in a long time. And I'll speed the game up and synthesize as much as possible. The deployment was, again, I said the houses were kind of on the side. I split my whole army around that house. So half of my army was on the very board edge with a channel to run up the board edge covered by houses. And the other half of the army was on the other side of the house that was essentially open to the middle of the board. And so he mirrored me in deployment and he put his elves heavy on the side channel. And so the maneuvering tactic was go up as close to 12 inches as possible, stay out of 12 inch range, and right when I'm at 12 inch range, march and cut across, take the army that was on the outside of the map, cut across into the middle of the board and leave his elves out of position and go attack the dwarven front really hard. And that's what I did. Pulled
Nice.
off, it worked out really well, pulled it off with great success. He didn't have, I think, a single shot, essentially, except for the Lake Town guys who were sitting there, staring down the horde of my army running at them. And the turn that I marched and cut through the houses and went to the middle of the board, Thorin and the dwarves were out of position because, again, I marched 15 inches with all of my serpent riders in Soladin. All of a sudden, I have the charge advantage. I don't care if I win or lose priority, you're at risk. And so the next turn, we go to the roll off. Again, his elves and Thranduil are on the other side of the house, completely out of position. Thorin is kind of exposed. He loses priority and opts to do a heroic move with Thorin to back up a little bit just to prevent me from charging in that turn. So in my mind, I'm very carefully counting. Thorin's got two might left because Thorin is free heroic combats on a goat against D4 with an elven weapon. Very scary model against Serpent Horde, in my opinion.
Oh yeah, and fight 6, he outfights everybody, so all you gotta protect your heroes because he's gonna be bulking all your guys. Yep.
Yep, and just go a monster with the heroic combat. He's going to whittle me down and break me single-handedly. And again, this elf army, he was at like 39-ish models, maybe 40, because of the Lake Town spam. So it's not like even like I have a crazy numbers advantage. But I'm definitely outclassed in the hero department. So he opts to spend a point of might and back up a little bit. He doesn't back up a ton and he doesn't back up with everybody because the heroic move didn't benefit everybody. And so I just move straight forward, setting up another priority roll off where Thranduil's still trying to run around the house with the elves. They're out of position for at least one more turn. And I am still threatening to charge Thranduil or to charge
Thorn.
Thorin and the
Yep.
dwarves. And I charge on that turn again because he couldn't get everybody. I charge two knights in to get you know, hey, they're within banner range, 6-inch banner, plus one on the charge. I'm gonna try and pick off some Lake Town guys. And it works. I, you know, kill a couple. But now the table is set where I'm about 6 inches away from these knights. He's about 6 inches away from the knights. The knights are kind of in the middle. The serpent guard, I keep saying knights. The serpent guard or the two serpent guard are in the middle. He wins priority, and Thorin goes in and charges the serpent, one of the serpent guard. And the thought process is now he can start activating heroic combats, you know, here and there. Let's see what happens. And I do a little bit of math. Thranduil is still 2 turns away minimum. And so I charge in with everybody. I charge Soladon into Thorin. I charge 2 more Serpent Guard into Thorin. I swarm his Dwarven contingent of Iron Hills, and the lines clash. And he's basically trapped on every single fight. And so we go down to the fight phase. We both strike. And my thought process, he charges. I knew it was going to be strike off. I knew it would burn 1 more point of might. It would put him down at only 1 point of might left. Goroth is, you know, 2 inches away from the fight. And the thought process, okay, like, Soladon will charge in now. But then the next turn, you had priorities. So if I win the 50-50 roll off, you might even be spending your point of might to do a heroic move or something stupid. And now it's a little cheap 80-point captain is going to be threatening Thorin's life every turn and making you strike off. So charge in, counsel his charge bonus. We strike off. We both roll 5 highs. And my soul crushes a little bit because, again, Soladon plus banner plus 3 warriors. I roll a 5 high. He rolls a 5 high. We both spend a point of might to go to 6. He won the strike off, so he wins. But he doesn't do any wounds. So now Thorin's out of might. And Soladon and Goroth are sitting right in front of him, and he's totally swarmed. Next turn, I win priority. Goroth goes in. Goroth strikes with like 3 Abrakan Guard, 2 knights. Everybody's got wounding bonuses, and they delete Thorin. The third turn of combat, or second turn of combat, and Thranduil and the captain are still running to try and catch up to the fight.
Wow.
So I'm thinking to myself, hey, this is working out really well. Clash by Moonlight really favors getting a hero kill, and it values, again, breaking and hero kills. So I need to be looking for the captain, because I think the victory point condition is I have to kill more heroes and have one left. And breaking.
Yes.
So I'm thinking, hey, we're in really good shape here. The mid-game, he plays really well. His aura of dismay from Thranduil's crown is incredible value. I failed more than 50% of my courage tests, which, again, I outnumber him. So the mortar guys are +2 because of the army bonus and Warhorn. My normal just servant horde guys are all courage 4 with the Warhorn. I'm failing more than 50% of my courage. And that messes up my ability to bring numbers to bear. Nature's Wrath goes off. Is making all my guys prone. All of the palace guard are +1 to wound, so they're wounding me on 4s. And so this, like, out of nowhere, this battle becomes horrible. He's just mopping the floor with me. From a mid-game perspective, he goes from losing Thorin instantly to breaking me and not being broken in a matter of just a couple turns. And so we're in the last phases of the game. One important thing happened. Thranduil was trying to run forward. And in his rush to run forward, he was standing in front of 3 of my archers. So 3 of my archers just sat there and shot at him for a turn and put a wound on him with the Clash by Moonlight +1 scenario bonus.
Yep.
Yeah. So that was super nice. He had to burn. I think he burnt all his fate. He rolled horrible on his fate, so he burnt all his fate. So Thranduil's out of fate and low on resources. He has spent a might to block the fate, or a might to boost the fate. So Thranduil is diminished on resources charging in. But again, that mid game, he breaks me without being broken, and breaks me pretty comfortably without being broken. And then Thranduil breaks through the line, where Soladon and the Golden King and Goroth are all kind of hiding out. I'm kind of fighting an L-shaped formation. Thranduil makes a play, goes into back line, and gets stalled. So he's now out of might. He didn't kill Soladin, which is what he was going for. He's trying for a one punch. It fails epically. He doesn't even put a wound on Soladin. And then now he's sitting in the back line with no might, chilling. And I have three left. I've saved three. All on striking. One on the Golden King for heroic move and two on Goroth for strikes.
Nice.
And so the last two turns were critical. And this is the game is coming down to it. I don't have a chance of breaking him. It's just that's not possible. I played too poorly in terms of like being able to convert kills. So my play is the captain is exposed. The Golden King's going to go after the captain. And at this point, I have to go out of Thranduil. Otherwise, I'm running Soladin with his banner away from the battle, which is not good to keep my other guys alive. Like I'm losing enough models. He's going to break through on too many fronts.
Mm-hmm.
So I make the play for Thranduil. So the second to last turn, Golden King charges into the captain. Goroth charges into Thranduil, and I bring as many guys to Thranduil as I can. Abrakan Guard with spear support, a Serpent Rider.
Plus one to wound.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is Thranduil, so he's like D6. So all these guys are going to be like wounding on fours and fives, double dice. He's going to be knocked down, which means I'm protected the next turn because, again, he's got no might. I can control the game in terms of priority. So I charge in. How many guys can fit around an infantry base? That's how many I charged in. It was an incredible investment. And I roll the epic one on the strike. So I strike to six. And then Eric starts laughing because Thranduil's blade master rule is I get one dice per every guy that charges into me. So Thranduil rolls like eight dice on the
30
duel.
Dice.
something stupid, like eight dice on the duel. Clearly he rolls a six. He wins. And he has eight dice now to do damage against me. It just murks the guys that went into him trying to kill him. So I'm thinking like, oh geez. And then it's the last turn because of time. So it's okay, this is the last turn. The Golden King lost his fight against the captain. So I failed on two fronts. I failed on killing the captain, failed on killing Thranduil. We go to the last turn, use the point of might to move so I can at least dictate the final fights. Golden King goes back into the captain. And then I have I misplayed this, sorry, because there was two rounds of hitting Thranduil with strikes that failed. So the one I just told you was the last one, I guess. So Goroth is out of might because I have no more strikes. So I'm thinking like, what are the odds? Like he has three wounds. He's D6. There's victory points. I'm doing the math in terms of like, hey, like, am I going to win this? And because breaking is valued so highly, like essentially I have to kill Thranduil to have a shot at winning. Because killing Thranduil gives me more heroes killed plus the leader, which will counteract the fact that he broke me without being broken. And so Golden King goes into the captains, and then I opt to have just Goroth and a Serpent Rider charge Thranduil. Okay. And my thought is, hey, that's four dice with a banner. I'm not going to put Soladin in because that's just I'm giving away more points potentially. The Soladin goes into a non-consequential battle, if you even charge it all, I can't remember. And so the two plays were, can Thranduil roll a six? Because if he doesn't, he's going to get knocked prone because of the mounted charge, and Goroth will have four dice to wound, plus the warrior, and can the Golden King kill the captain? So
those were your plays. Yep.
Those are the plays. And I tried. I counted the victory points. I was like, hey, let's see what matters here. And the results were the Golden King killed the captain. And Thranduil rolled a six.
So close.
And so Thranduil beat everybody back, remained unharmed. And so, again, I sped through most of the game in terms of what happened, but it clearly was a bloodbath. It was a bloodbath for him. His dwarves were resilient. His elves were just incredible. The piercing strike on the Legtown guys, he played really well with them. Laissez-faire, because he didn't care if they died. And, oh, by the way, they have a 50-50 chance of killing you if they win the fight. That converted. He converted all of those. Yeah, bloodbath for him. And my plays to try and murk his leader didn't work. So I ended up losing that one. The final score was 4-7. And the scoring there was...
He broke without being broken.
That's 5. Right. He had one hero left alive, Thranduil.
So that's 6. And then he wound your leader?
Yep, he wounded Zilladin.
Yep, so it's 7. So and then 7. You killed his leader, correct?
No.
Thorin. Oh, Thranduil was his leader?
Thranduil was his leader, yep. Okay. Thranduil was his leader. So my score was 3 victory points because I...
Killed more heroes.
Killed more heroes.
You had one alive, so that's 4.
Yeah, is it 1 alive or did I put a wound on Thranduil? How did I score 4? I got to actually remind myself of the scoring. I rarely play
Clash by Moonlight.
Clash by Moonlight, to be honest. So
let me pull it up.
So it's 3 for the heroes. So if you have a hero alive and you've killed more, it's 3 victory points.
Okay, so you don't double count. Okay, yeah.
I put a wound on Thranduil.
So you killed more heroes. You got 3. And you put a wound on the leader, so that's 4.
Yep.
Got it.
And again, in terms of the post-game review, this was our lunch break. So Eric and I ended up talking all the way through lunch break about the game plus other things. I agree. He had a take, and I agree with it. After I killed Thranduil, I should have disengaged completely. Because the way we engaged... Thorne. Sorry, I keep messing this up. Yes, Thorne. After I killed Thorne early, I should have disengaged and reformed a brand new battle line. Because what ultimately happened is he ended up wedging himself against a house and the board edge to create a really powerful wall. And the first 2 or 3 turns of combat, which went his way dramatically, I had a lot of instances where a horse couldn't charge in or Serpent Rider couldn't charge in because it wasn't room, or there wasn't a lot of fights where I was really optimizing my numbers at that time. And then he whittled it down, and then all of a sudden it's an even fight, and it was an even fight where he had the superior troops by far. And so his commentary was, if you would have disengaged and reformed a line in the wide open, there wouldn't have been as much bubble to play around. So the Aura of Dismay wouldn't have been as valuable. Plus the Nature's Wrath wouldn't have been as valuable. And you would have been swarming me instead of fighting, straight up. And I agree with that. But again, I feel like this was definitely a game where, similar to AOL and the Belrog, it came, like, I was in the game. I was commanding the game early on. I lost it in the mid-game, but had a chance to come back at the very end.
That's why we know it. You know, it happens where you roll the 1 on the strike. But you did everything right. You had him surrounded with a couple turns left to go. If that goes your way, that time where you roll a 3+ on your strike, we're talking a completely different game.
Not completely, because let's do the math. So if I killed Thranduil, that's another
point. It's another 2 points.
That's 1 point.
Oh, yeah.
So I go to 5. I go to 5. And I kill all of his heroes, so I get +2 because my 3 goes to 5 because I killed more heroes and had a hero alive. Yep. And he had none alive. So that becomes a 7-6
win.
And 7-6 win. So it's not even you're right. I'm in the game. I felt like I was in the game. I didn't feel like it was a blowout by any means. But best case for me, it's a minor win. Barely a minor
but
win.
But you had, when you did that trap on Thranduil, where you lost that many guys, you lost Goroff, you didn't lose Goroff, but you lost his point of might, all that stuff. How different do you think that would have been for them to reinforce and help break him? Because that's the other thing. If you break him.
That's a good question. It was key because Suladin lost his horse that turn.
Yeah. A lot of what ifs. We're talking a lot of what ifs, but I do feel like you were in the game.
Definitely in the game. Definitely not. Like, there was no scenario based on how our lines clashed. Maybe if I changed how the lines clash, things go differently and I start converting some of the traps. But there was no scenario where that was like a 12-0. or I was at, I had a path to 12-0. And when I play these games and I'm analyzing a list, I always analyze, like, was there a path to 12-0? Or am I dealing with, like, my best play here? In this case, my best play here is 7 victory points out of 12. That's not super great.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So another what I'll generously call for myself, generously call a toss-up game, where, again, I'm tempting the dice. Can I roll a 3 up on a strike? I lose it, so I go to 2-2 for the tournament. But this is now the second game where my maximum potential is not great. And I really felt the pain of having low fight, weaker support heroes in Soladin and the Golden King, essentially running and hiding from Thorin and Thranduil. And I was able to kill Thorin really quickly. If I hadn't have executed that Thorin kill, like, he would have 12-0'd me. Because my list just cannot face those two heroes. And so that was a very eye-opening game in terms of my maximum potential is capped. I have too many support heroes. This is not good.
Yeah. So I agree with that. And what's cool is your analysis of this is getting this out of the way for a prep tournament. It's doing exactly what you're wanting. What does this army do? I'm talking a lot of theory. I want to get it on the table. I want to test it out.
Yeah. And I was really happy because the caliber of opponent was great. So you're not also playing a game where, you know, sometimes you go to an event and it's somebody's first tournament, and nothing against it. I love people coming out and risking a tournament and going to an event. That's awesome. More power to you. But if it's their first event, maybe they miss a couple plays, or maybe they make a blunder that they wouldn't have otherwise if they weren't nervous or whatever. That wasn't the case here. Again, every single opponent was a very seasoned, really good player I would say clearly I was outplayed in AOL. I was out the Belrog. I think we were evenly matched. He won, and he should have won, but I wouldn't say I was outplayed, but he was still a very good player and beat me soundly. And then I think the Mirkwood dwarf player outplayed me after being shell shocked. He recovered from the shell shock of not being able to shoot. He recovered from the shell shock of losing his big hero and came back to beat me pretty soundly. So, like, I was happy against the competition. I was happy about the competition and being able to see how good players attack my list.
Yep, that's good.
So
it's great to see that, get that data. Yep. All right, on to game 5.
Last game, another fun game in terms of just good opponent and stuff, but it was a very boring game from what happened. So the matchup was against Gondor. It was a Boromir with Banner and all captain spam. So he had Ingold. He had Madril. He had a Knight of the White Tower. And did he have anybody else? I feel like he had one more guy that I'm just not thinking of. Maybe it was those three.
Irelass, maybe? I don't know. I'm trying to think of another hero that you would throw in there.
Yeah, whoever was. It essentially was Captain Spam. So it was Guard of the Fountain Court, Rangers, Boromir, and all these three might captains. So it was a super might heavy army, shield wall type army. So, again, I was in another situation where I have to charge at him because I'm shooting into a shield wall. He's shooting a D4 with his 9 Rangers plus Madril. And so I march twice to run up into his face. And then our lines clashed, and we were playing Assassination, and I want to talk to you about this for a couple minutes. I know we've already been chatting for a while, but this is like the third time I've played Assassination where, according to my opponent, my target was blatantly obvious because of how I played. And in this one, it strikes me because I didn't think I did anything to give it away. So my target was the Knight of the White Tower.
Mm-hmm.
Because just thinking about it, Ingold's got defense, and he's going to be kind of the back line. Boromir's leader, so I can't pick him. Madril's a scout ranger, and it's going to be really easy to hide him in the back line the whole game. But the Knight of the White Tower is a striking hero, so it makes sense that he's going to have to be on the front line, so I at least have a shot. And the way my army marched toward the Knight of the White Tower was on the very end of his battle line. He had a very large model army. It was on the end of the battle line. Goroth and Soladin were in the middle to the right side, and the Golden King was like middle left. So there was no hero that went for the Knight of the White Tower. When our lines clashed, the Knight of the White Tower came to the edge off a heroic combat, and then he was left out there. And the following turn, I win priority. Either there was a heroic move off that I won, or there was no heroic move off. And I'm tagging people. I have a little bit of a numbers advantage on the left side just because I swarmed that way to start with. And I put two Abrakan guard against the Knight of the White Tower in such a way that he is trapped. It was two Abrakan guard and a spear support. Two Abrakan guard and two spear support. So just four warriors against a hero on the end of the line who's trapped. And according to my opponent at the end of the game when we were chatting, that's when he knew the Knight of the White Tower was my target. And I was sitting there thinking, really?
I bet you he had a suspicion himself, because I know the weakest hero in that list is still the Knight of the White Tower. Like, you think it's Madril, it's not, because Madril's not fighting. He's not a combat guy.
He's gonna hide.
And the Knight of the White Tower is D6, two wounds, one fate. And yeah, he has the broadsword, but that's still pretty vulnerable when he's all by himself. So he's probably got it in the front of his mind. It's probably the Knight of the White Tower. I'm looking for any opportunity that he makes a move towards him. And as soon as you go for the trap and the move of the first time, he's like, oh yeah, it was blatantly obvious. But maybe it wasn't, because it could have easily still been Madril or Ingold.
Yeah, that's fair. So like, again, I was intentionally trying to avoid feinting any hero that way to spook the White Tower. Because again, our model count was similar, and then by the time he finished shooting me, he had the model count advantage. So there was no swarming that was going to happen. He was sandwiched between terrain, a forest, and ruins. I wasn't going to be getting around him, so like, I had to be very careful. Anyways, you know, shocker of all shocks, the Knight of the White Tower fended off a barrage after barrage of Abrakan guard charging him. Only one of which would have been like the fatal blow. Like, if he would have botched. If he would have rolled a 4 high or a 5 high with the broadsword going down, he would have died. But he rolled a 6. And so let's see what happened. So the Boromir and the Golden King were essentially matched up against each other formation-wise. Both weren't in combat. I mean, the Golden King maybe attack here, but like, the Golden King wasn't going in hard because all his guys are fight 5. And I can't risk, you know, putting a potential target out there to take a wound from warriors. And Boromir, and I think this was a misplay by my opponent. Boromir was super passive. He played the passive role great, but instead of playing the passive role in the front line, you know, picking on D4 troops one at a time, maybe, he was purely in the back line. So Boromir was not in combat at all. So I wasn't mad about that. And then all of my Serpent Riders and Goroth went hard on the right flank, because again, his battle line was split by a couple pieces of terrain. One was a forest that he fought next to. Then we had a big, thick battle line where Boromir's banner affected the whole thing. Then there was like a piece of ruined terrain, and then he had a huge contingent of Fountain Court Guard and more elite troops, Citadel Guard, etc., out off by themselves. And so I went hard with the Serpent Riders and some Abrakan Guard. And my thought process is like, I want to kill them. I'll pull Soladin over to provide banner support. And I'm going to use that as a slingshot to get to his back line and start picking on all these heroes that are chilling back there. Because I was somewhat suspicious that Ingold would be his choice to protect. Oh, sorry. So we're playing Fog of War. We're not playing
Assassination. It's Fog of War. Oh, got it. So this is a little bit different. Okay.
Yeah, well, for whatever reason, I'm not looking at my notes and reading correctly. So yeah, I had a suspicion Ingold was going to be who he protected, and Ingold was sitting in the back line. So I was like, hey, let's try for a slingshot play. And again, the battle line fighting under Boromir's banner, it goes his way, as you'd expect, because he's got fight 5, he's got low defense guys, but it doesn't go his way as well as it could have. And so I'm losing guys, I'm clearly losing the fight, but I'm not getting mopped. And then I overinvested to kill the right flank. It stalls for a turn. It takes a turn longer than it should have, in my mind. And it starts making me nervous, but I end up, you know, crunching everybody, and that lets me catapult into his back line. And so I set up a pretty nice heroic combat with Soladin and Goroth and the boys, and launch into charge range, threat range of Madril, Boromir, and Ingold. And so then my opponent has to make a decision. Does he continue to support the front line with Boromir? Does he go after the Golden King, who's now starting to become pretty dangerously exposed to Boromir, being able to just charge in and go kill him? Because again, Boromir's sitting on 5 points of might, just in reserve. So that's easy, you know, a one turn kill with a with on a horse charging infantry king model. And so he opts to go for the king kill. And then that leaves all of his heroes in the back line exposed. And so he's leaning on, you know, heroic defense, you know, being able to stall me for a couple turns. Just fast forwarding through, heroic defense does stall me for one turn. I don't overinvest. I put, you know, a couple guys, one Abrican guard in a trap to force the defense to be called. I charge with Goroth to bring fight five. So he has to call something. But I am maneuvering guys to move further towards my terrain piece and further towards the Knight of the White Tower, who is still on that same, if it's my perspective, he's still on the left flank, but I'm wrapping all the way around, trying to line up one last play. And also threaten Boromir, because like I'll throw my leader into Boromir on Fog of War and stall Boromir for a couple turns. No horse charge bonus knocked to the ground. Soladin will last, you know, a turn or two for sure. And so we're getting to time being called. And I kill Ingold, which felt good.
Nice.
I kill Madril, which feels good.
Nice.
The Knight of the White Tower is still, like, annoyingly protected. I bog Boromir down, because, again, Boromir, to kill the Golden King, Boromir flubbed a roll, spent might, flubbed roll on the wounding. Because, again, the Golden King has four wounds, two fate. So I passed my fate. So Boromir actually had to spend everything to kill the Golden King over the course of two turns. Okay. So now Boromir is kind of sitting like a wet noodle because I have might left over still, because I killed his heroes that had might. And my final play for the last turn, you know, as we're racing against the clock, is Soladin's going to go into my terrain piece, and he's going to try and kill the two guys that are on my terrain piece. All of my other warriors rush onto the terrain piece. And so from a count perspective, I need Soladin to win his combat and kill the dudes. Two rangers. Goroth.
Nice, very doable.
Goroth, they set up a heroic combat where, because of control zones and stuff, I'm essentially going to be able to kill, again, assuming I win and kill, I tag two control zones and then get two guys, one of which being Goroth, into the Knight of the White Tower and force one more, you know, toe-to-toe going for a kill on my fight. Target. Yeah, with Tide Fight. The Knight of the White Tower is out of might. And so Tide Fight, and he's got a broadsword. I guess he also has a dagger he could have fought with, but whatever. But Knight of the White Tower has a dagger, right?
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
So
he just reminded me of it. Yeah, so he could just opt not to fight two-handed. Yeah.
Yeah, we're both under banner. We're both Tide Fight, whatever. But he's only got two dice, no might.
So there's one more information I need. Who, now that we know it's Fog of War, who are you protecting? Was it the Golden King or was it Goroth?
Goroth.
Nice.
So again, in retrospect, and at this point, it's the last game, you know, clearly neither one of us are playing for a podium. We're playing for 500, right? The safe play would have been Goroth goes and hides in the bushes with Soladin. But I went for the YOLO play. Like, hey, Soladin kills these two guys. I take my terrain piece.
Goroth kills the knight. I don't think that's a YOLO play, and I'll explain my reasoning. Because obviously he's going to have to fight with the dagger, knowing, as he said, this is your target, right? So it's all about keeping alive. Two strength, four attacks going back on Goroth doesn't sound threatening to me.
Well, and the other guy that went with him, and there were others around, was an orc. And Goroth has a special rule where I can allocate the killing blow against an orc within an inch.
Oh,
so
even
Goroth,
better. Even
Goroth
better.
Can't die, but he could get wounded. And okay. the Knight of the White Tower has Mighty Blow. So again, I say he can't die.
Only with the broadsword.
Yeah, yeah, but
only with the broadsword.
I have two orcs, so I can allocate four wounds and still survive. Because one strike...
It doesn't... each wound does D3 wounds. So as you'd allocate a wound to an orc...
I thought Mighty Blow was just double. So each wound does two.
Oh, yeah. I'm thinking of Bane.
You're thinking about the...
Yeah,
you're thinking about Bane.
Yeah. But again, each wound does two wounds. So it's still the same principle. So you allocate the wound to the orc. It does double. It doesn't get... Oh, I guess he is striking Goroff. Oh, yeah, that's interesting.
So
I'd have to read the rules on that. That's an interesting rules debate. I'd have to look into that.
No, because he strikes Goroff. So he's got, let's just talk about this. So he's got two attacks, and he's got Mighty Blow.
Right.
And let's say he does, yes. Each of his attacks deals a wound. But he does it one at a time, like you should. So the first strike deals two wounds to Goroff, who's a captain and only has two wounds. So I use my fate, and if I fail the fate, I allocate one wound to Goroth because I have to. Then the second wound would have killed him, but I can allocate the killing blow to an orc.
Got it. Okay.
So that leaves, he's got one more strike. He does a wound that does two wounds. One wound kills Goroth, so he has to allocate that to orc. Okay, so Goroth could have died. If I wouldn't have passed my fate, Goroth could have died.
Okay, each time Goroth suffers a wound that costs... Sorry, I want to dive into this. This seems super interesting. So each time Goroth suffers a wound that would cause him to be slain after fate points have been spent, he may roll... Did he have fate?
Yeah, he was untouched. So he has two wounds, one fate. He's a captain.
Okay, so after fate points have been spent, he may roll a d6 on a 2+. Goroth may select a friendly mortar orc model within 1 inch to thrust in himself weight. The selected model will suffer the wound instead of Goroth. Models that suffer a wound in this way may not benefit from Fury Magical Rule, but may use fate points as normal. Okay, so there's that rule. Now I'd like to go into Mighty Blow, because what my thinking is a successful wound causes two wounds. So, but it doesn't, you don't get just like four wounds to allocate where you want. I think one wound does two wounds. So if you
one
thrust
strike.
The orc, yeah, so
one
if you thrust,
that... go ahead.
If you thrust an orc in front to take that wound, it suffers the two wounds that would kill Goroth instead of you.
Let's think about this very slowly. So one successful strike that deals a wound actually deals two damage. I'm going to use the 40K word because it's easier to think about this in 40K because it's a really common 40K mechanic. I'm sure other games too, but I know it from 40K. So one wound does two damage.
Okay.
The first strike does a wound against Goroth.
Which would do two damage, which would kill him.
But he hasn't spent his fate. So he has to spend his fate.
Okay.
He fails it. So now I would have died.
Okay.
I can allocate the killing blow against the orc. So the first wound doesn't kill me. It's the second damage that kills me. So I can allocate the second damage.
I think either way, it's still a risk because at that point, we're talking one successful hit kills Goroth. But I think the way it technically plays out, let me read Mighty Blow really quick. So each strike that successfully wounds in close combat, this model inflicts two wounds rather than one. I believe each strike, so we're talking about a successful strike hit Goroth with two wounds left, which would kill him because it would double to two. He then thrusts the orcs in front of him. So instead of suffering one wound, the orc suffers it, which then doubles to two. So Goroth is still at two wounds. And then rinse and repeat. That's how I think it works.
Okay, well, look, you have Goroth's rule up. I have Mighty Blow up. So it says for each strike, that's a wound. So he allocates one strike to me. Does Goroth say takes a wound or takes a strike? I can allocate a strike or a wound. If it's wound, I feel pretty confident that Mighty Blow does two damage. The first damage Goroth eats. The second damage that would have killed him, he can allocate to the orc.
We will need to look into it. What Goroth says is each time Gorath suffers a wound that would cause him to be slain.
So you can't allocate the whole mighty. I think, you can't allocate the strike from the mighty blow. You can allocate half the damage.
That'd be interesting. I'd like to deep dive because that kind of goes against everything else, like fading a Morgul blade or fading a trebuchet hit or something like that, an artillery hit. One fate blocks all of it, Bane too.
I just thought about this. Like if Gorath took a catapult shot to the face, he could allocate that to an orc on a 2+.
Isn't that great? But you'd have to burn your fate first, but still.
Worthwhile.
But like a Bane rule, a successful wound causes D3 wounds, which would kill him, right? But
we're off topic slightly because I think for the scenario perspective, it was clearly the wrong play because again, without cards being dealt, I felt very confident that Ingold was his defensive target. So I took away 3 points there. I had models on my terrain piece. I wasn't able, Sulladin botched his combat, didn't kill, but I outnumbered him on my terrain piece. So that's a point. And let me see I gotta look at my notes for scoring.
Did you protect your guy?
Yeah, and I protected my guy. So that's 7 for me, right?
Yeah, so did you kill the Knight of the White Tower? You didn't get into that.
No. Gorath flubbed the roll and didn't. I didn't win.
Okay, so you didn't kill your target and you outnumbered on your terrain piece. So that is a -4. So you should have 8, I believe.
So 1 point on your terrain piece.
Yep, successfully defended. That's 3. And then so breaking without being broken. Did you break without being broken?
No, we should have both broke. We both broke.
Okay. So that's another 1. So instead, I see a 5.
I marked it as 5-4 final score. So 5-4. He got 3 because he killed his target, which was the Golden King.
Yeah, makes sense. I figured when Boromir YOLO'd ran into him.
And he broke me. So 4.
Got it. Nice.
So again.
Oh, who is he trying to protect? Probably Ingold. You were probably right.
Yeah, I was right. He was nice. Checking Ingold. So I took 3 victory points from him there. So again, from a tactical perspective, that play of throwing Gorath into the White Tower could have lost me the game. It was a 50-50 chance that it could have lost me the game or it could have won me the game. For like major victory, right? Because that would have been another 3 points. That would have put me up to 8.
And you were also counting on the Sulladin play. You're counting on 2.
So yeah, it was 2+.
Was it win by 4 or more or win by 5 or more?
4.
4 more. So you just needed 1.
It was either 4 or double. I can't remember. Yeah, scoring wise. So again, not the smartest play, but I wanted to do it just for it was the last game. Let's try to go out on a super high note. And it failed on both accounts, but I still snuck out with a 5-4.
Nice. So you ended the whole tournament 3-2. Let's see that you had 1 major win and 2 minor wins, and then one major loss, 1 minor loss.
Yep. And this was the 5th game in a row where, this was the 4 out of 5th game, 4th game in a row, where I was very frustrated about my matchup in terms of I felt like I was sweating tremendously to try and pull off a win.
Mm.
And I think my opponent misplayed. So we're talking about, hey, could you have won? Could you have lost? My opponent had 1 combat the entire game with Boromir.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's pretty big, pretty substantial.
And that was to kill the Golden King. So it was a good victory point. It was good from a victory point investment. But the amount of warriors Boromir could have safely played if he was maybe a tad bit more aggressive, keeping him in the middle. Like you don't have to go gung-ho with Boromir, but the difference that could have made is tremendous. Because there's no way I would have gotten to my terrain piece. There's no way Ingold would have been in danger.
Yep.
So the likelihood of that being very different if we played 10 games, I think is very high. So it was another game where I got absolutely outshot. Like I didn't even attempt to shoot because of the disparity in bow fire. It was another game where my 2 support heroes were super heavy. Because again, Sulladin played fantastic. The Golden King played fantastic. they were outmatched by everything on the board. Boromir could have feasted on either one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And if Boromir was aggressive, I would have been on my back feet, running, just trying to stay alive.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So it was overall a very fun event. I was super grateful for everybody who I got to play against. It was very eye-opening, but the list, the idea that I have as constructed is not viable. The double support hero is not viable.
You need a hitter, something to go in there.
Either I need more points to play with, so maybe at 800, I can invest that 50 points in a Mordor hero or a third hero who is scary by himself.
Upgrade Goroth to something, like a Shagrat or something. Yeah,
because I mean, Goroth's already 80 points or whatever, so that means I have 130 points to invest in a hero. There's a lot of really good heroes that are scary that you can get for 130-ish points, because you can mess around and easily make 130, 150. Like, there's options there, but at 750, Soladin and the Golden King were very, very, very heavy.
Well, cool. Good to know. Good notes. Good recaps.
Interesting. This is the last thing I'll say, though. Interestingly enough, over all five games, even if you take away the fact that the Golden King made Azog run away, over all five games, I would have rated Golden King more value impact, more value add than the Soladin.
That is a hot take.
It is a hot take. But the hot take, it comes down to a couple reasons. The banner disparity is not as what people think, because really it's more like a 4.5-inch radius than this 3-inch.
Right.
So you don't lose a ton in your banner. And the amount of times in the composition that I had where Soladin had to go make a play because he was a hero on a horse that took him out of the fray meant that I wasn't getting his banner bonus as much with like my frontline fighters. And so the Golden King, he has a lot of downfalls. He's got a lot of downside, but he's not making those weird tactical, strategic, either run to an objective or protect something, right? I got way more banner consistency out of the Golden King.
Now, the only thing I'm going to rebuttal, just being devil's advocate, do you think if you didn't have the Golden King and instead you had a hitter like, I don't know, an Amdur or something like that, do you think you'd be sending him and keeping Soladin in the back?
So that's a very fair point.
Soladin would become that consistent.
I was careful with my words. I said with my composition, Golden King got a higher rating. You're absolutely right. If I would have subbed that 130 points and invested in like a better hero, Soladin would have been the guy sitting in the back line, not moving. And the other guy would have been having to go run and make a play at the end of the game.
Makes sense. All right. Well, cool. I do like this experiment, and I like the idea of trying models that aren't used very much. And I love the fact that you made a 240 point model or whatever Azog is.
That was. I felt I'm blanking on the guy's name. Again, he was really friendly. He was down on himself the whole game because it was a pretty uphill battle for him just because of the scenario and the army matchup. And then he even got further down on himself because of how quickly the kill count disparity opened up.
Right.
But then he got himself into a path where he could win the game. And he was back into it. He was rolling dice. And he won priority that last time, which was he's going into my heroes on the charge. Here we come. And the look on his face when I was like, don't forget to take your stand fast. You have to roll this time. And he rolled it and he almost grabbed the dice. I said, nope, don't touch it. We got to do some math. And then like for the next 3 minutes, he made me reread the rule 4 times. We did the math probably 13 times. We had Alisher as the TO come over and make sure we were doing the math correctly in terms of, you know, his courage value going down to 1, then add his dice and add all his will. And at the end, he's just like, this isn't fun, man. Like, that's a real crappy rule. He didn't say that, but he said something to that effect. I was like, I know, but that's like the only thing he's got. So you got to give it to me. He's like, yeah, that's fair. But that's a real feel bad moment, man. That's a real bad moment.
I just find it so ironic that this, by far the scariest thing on that table, is the one that's being forced to run away.
Yeah.
Show me your gold. Boo.
Yeah, because that's how he also, like, as we're wrapping up the last bit of the game, he's like, that doesn't even make sense. Azog's not motivated by money. Like, we were getting down into the real aspects of the lore there.
That's funny. Well, cool. Great recap. We still have some listeners listening, I'm impressed, and I thank you guys. I know this was a long episode, but I enjoy these recaps quite a lot. I enjoy getting into the nitty-gritty and also, like, learning lessons and, like, oh, yeah, always hit the warg on the warg marauder. Oh, yeah, you know, this and that. So,
well,
I enjoy these.
It's hard to say always because we're going to put ourselves at risk of becoming the people that make a lot of academic discussions. But what I enjoy about when the brothers and our friends are talking, sometimes we record it, sometimes we don't. We are trying things and say, hey, I've tried this now twice. Both times it didn't work. And these are the reasons it doesn't work. Don't think it's worth the risk anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. I agree with you. I'm not going to jump into that. Oh, this is what you must do and always do. Yep. You're right. Good call. Thanks for correcting me on that. But most of the time,
I strongly recommend attacking the warg first.
Yes. So, the only other situation I can think of is like it's final turn. You know it's the final turn and you're about get outnumbered on an object. But other than that, I'm sure there's more.
If you have a fearless army. I've faced AOL with a lot of marauders with my Cause of Doom. And because I wasn't taking courage tests, it was a huge benefit to keep those chunky bases from letting the AOL army come to bear. So that's another example where I felt very comfortable leaving the warg, you know, intact.
There we go. We just found another example. Nice job.
But for those,
most of the time,
courage four armies do not like terror, as I learned. But no. So the recap on the list, I enjoyed it. It's not viable. I want to keep working on it, but to be honest, I'm a little burnt because I played a lot of variations and I painted, and I actually tried. I painted 50 models to prepare for the Serpent Horde Golden King idea. So many of them were nullified because as I was modifying, originally I had 3 Serpent Horde warbands. I brought in the Mordor warband. The army that I took to Philly was probably 25 of the original painted 50. And my new ideas of like what I want to try next take away all but 16 of what I've already painted. And so I'm really depressed and burnt out on the fact that I spent so much time and effort in December and January painting, and I'm not necessarily using those models in lists right now. So I'm going to take a break from crafting on this army for a couple months, play some armies that I've already got painted so I don't have to burn the midnight oil on the hobby side. And then when the hobby juices are flowing, then I'll come back and keep working on some ideas.
Nice. Nice, nice. Well, with that, I think it's time to close out the episode, unless you have anything else to add.
Nope, we can wrap it up there. We hopefully we'll get an Adepta pre-Adepticon episode out here in a little bit.
Yeah, I'm pushing for that. We'll get Matt in. We'll get our lists, our breakdowns, our anticipations, and everything like that. The other thing I'm going to throw out there is I have started tracking our tournaments. And so far, Marcus, between you, me, and Matt, we have 9 events under our belt. And do you want to guess how many podiums we have in those 9 events?
Well, that's not fair because you just told me.
Yeah, that's fair. But it's still a high percentage. So I'm actually impressed with us so far. We're at 6 podiums out of 9 events. Yeah, so we're each averaging we're averaging 2 out of the 3 times we're podium.
Yeah, one of the brothers is in the podium at the end of the event. Pretty good.
That's 2 out of the other brothers.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. So two out of the brothers are podium every event. The stat I'm most excited for, we've got we're taking and tracking Durin's
performance
in 2024. And there's a comparison that we'll share at some point, but we are intentionally tracking Durin's individual performance from whoever plays him.
Because there will be events sometime this year where we all 3 take Durin. But so far, it's just been you and me. You've taken Durin twice to 2 events. I've taken him once so far in this year. Yeah. And he's got 2 podiums. So that's 2 of 3. That's exactly our statistics.
Oh, okay. And the one that I missed, I think I got 4th place. So he...
Fifth place, yeah.
Fifth place. I was very, very close.
You were very close to a podium.
a boneheaded blunder play from ending up on podium.
Yes.
So, yeah, Duren's done very well so far this year.
Yep. All righty. Well, thank you, everybody. If you're still listening, we will try to get an episode out ASAP because Adepticon's coming up very, very fast. But until then, have a good one, everybody.
Take care.